So there's a complete disconnect in this moment in time between the corporate message, what divisions are actually rolling out, and what people themselves want. So there's going to be some kind of a settling process over these coming months as people settle into the routines that actually work for them.
I'm Dan Smolin, and this is the Dan Smolin Podcast. We help people to navigate the future of work, to work that is profound, protects the planet, empowers people and communities, and is fun to do, meaningful work. The stories that our guests tell and the insights that they provide will inspire you to connect with work and experiences that stoke your passions and make the world a better place. For the future of work is meaningful work. This week, we are delighted by news that the nation continues to emerge from the pandemic. And for the first time since the pandemic started, New York City, once the nation's epicenter, recorded no COVID deaths. That city, and many others, are roaring back to life. And a key indicator of lives resumed is that restaurants, which last year were shuttered, have booked table reservations several weeks out. But while restaurants and brick-and-mortar retail are coming back to life, many co-located workplaces remain deserted. In New York City, less than 15% of professional workers have returned to their traditional offices. Findings vary, but it is likely that as many as half of all workforce professionals will adopt a work-from-anywhere approach to continue working from a home office, remotely from a non-office venue, or in a hybrid manner. 17 months of workplace disruption forced professionals to adapt to sudden change and rendered many of them agility experts. At first, the stresses of remote work sent many to a panic state, but now, those same people languish. They don't despair, but they're not thriving. Languishing people may seem effective on the job, but they long for more joy and purpose doing work as part of their day and not their entire day. And with that background, I am pleased to welcome Denise Bruder back to the podcast. She is a nationally recognized workplace futurist and the co-founder of Future of Work Community, Sway Workplace. Throughout the pandemic, Denise and her team dug deep into how people adjusted to their highly disrupted workplaces, and she is working hard to help them sway in the future of work. I spoke with Denise Bruder in May 2021 over Zoom. Denise Bruder, welcome back to the podcast.
Oh, good morning, and is it a pleasure to be back?
And it's a pleasure to see you, my friend. So you're the co-founder of Sway. And for those who didn't meet you last year when we first introduced you, what is Sway and what is its benefit to people who work?
So yes, we met each other last year when a lot of the COVID experience was kind of new. And we've been studying the future of work before that. So what we're doing at Sway is there's myself as a workplace futurist and my co-founder is a future of work coach. And together, we spent the last 2 years developing and researching a body of knowledge around the future of work and flexibility. And what we did in the end was we wrote the playbook. We literally wrote the playbook on how to work flexibly. So our playbook is what we do at Sway. We have a workshop experience around that, and we're building community around that. So communities of people and members that are looking to master the skill of flexibility and develop a future of work mindset. So that's what we do in our community product. And on the other side of Sway, we're developing a thought leadership series on the why, because I really think that the how is super important. That's the immediate problem we're addressing now. How do I work flexibly? How do I schedule myself? But the real undiscovered gem in all of this is when we get to the stage where we start asking ourselves the why, like, why does this matter? Why do we want to work flexibly? What is changing and why does it matter to me? So that's the thought leadership side of Sway, and that's where we're running with.
So you're a community and people pay to be a part of it. What could a member expect in terms of content, programming, and value from Sway?
So all of our members come to us for a workshop and a learning experience. And what that is it's a live, engaging, intensive learning experience around the playbook, which is your personal plan for how you are going to work flexibly. So I think what we're moving away from is the command and control structure of top hierarchy, moving more towards a personalized playbook on how you literally are going to schedule out your time, your day, your energy. How do you re-engineer how you communicate and see people and work together flexibly? So we literally end our learning point with a plan in place for you and how to do it well. That's what our members come to us for. But the beauty about the idea of community is that we continue the conversation. So we really believe that the future of work to empowerment is a journey. So we have a really practical touch point with all of our members. So they're empowered and they know how to work flexibly. We continue the conversation in our community over the long term with our members of like-minded people that are interested in mastering those skills over time.
I think one of the things we're really going to be struggling with as a workforce is the reintroduction to the workplace, whatever that means. You came out of the financial space, and I know places like Goldman Sachs, the CEO there, he wants everything to go back to the way it was in the old days, which I think aligns with that command and control construct that you just mentioned. It's really about control. What are your thoughts about the reintroduction and sort of the framing structures we have to put around the benefits of working from anywhere?
So in terms of the reentry, there are three conversations happening simultaneously, which is why there's such kind of confusion about this and why it's such an emotional entanglement. There is the broad scale messaging from a corporation. So when Goldman's CEO came out and said, we're butts in the seats, we're going back to the office, we're at an apprenticeship model, there was definitely value to that. Of course, human contact, you can't beat that, but that's like a broad scale message. But what we're finding through being boots on the ground in this industry is that there's something very different actually happening behind the closed doors of companies. So there's a broad scale message that's designed to create a sense of expectation and move people to look one direction. But then when you get to the next level, so what's actually happening within the company is very different to that top level message. Oftentimes they're letting divisions work out for themselves. How do your divisions and how do your teams want a reentry? And that could be very different to the corporate message. But then the third layer is, what do the actual people want to do? Which again, could be totally disconnected. So we've been having conversations recently with people that are coming to meet in the middle, where you have workers meeting with management, trying to get to consensus on what it looks like. So in one particular example, the management team want 1 week in, 1 week out. But the people we've been speaking with are saying, I'm going to try that, but it's not going to work for me. I actually want something different. So there's a complete disconnect in this moment in time between the corporate message, what divisions are actually rolling out, and what people themselves want. So there's going to be some kind of a settling process over these coming months as people settle into the routines that actually work for them. So I think this is where the idea of patience and practice comes in, being very thoughtful and not reacting, but thoughtfully respond. And that's what we coach to in our community. That's why our members are prepared to have this endurance and the idea of patience and practice to getting to the point of what works for them.
And then you add the layer of something called languishing, which Adam Grant from the New York Times wrote so beautifully about last month. And for those who are not familiar with the term, I would describe it as the muddling middle between thriving and in a place of despair. So when we started the pandemic, and when you and I spoke, we're all locked down in our little home offices. And I think a lot of people who were not up to the thrill of the change, struggled with high intensity anxiety, sort of like the fight or flight mode type of adrenaline pumping, freaked out kind of mindset. But as you and I spoke, a lot of people discovered, hey, this working remotely has a lot of benefits. I get to see family. I can be with my pets. I can rearrange my day around the day and not an 8 or a 10 or a 12 hour part of my day that is just for work. I think the prospect of going back to what was before the pandemic, I don't think it freaks people out, but I think that they are, well, maybe some are, there's this middling aspect where I don't know how I feel about it. And I really liked some of the aspects of being at home. I do miss the face-to-face contact. So what's going on here, Denise, from a workplace perspective that we need to be very intentional about? What are your thoughts?
Right. So that was an excellent article by Adam Grant. And I think that it really encapsulated in words what we're all kind of feeling. I'll give you the answer and then I'll back into why I think about that. Right now we have a question mark. We just don't know. And uncertainty is so uncomfortable for people. I don't know how I'm going to react when I go back. I don't know how I'm going to convince people to stay out. Do I want to stay out? Can I do it well? It's just a big question mark. When you go back to the original idea of languishing, I don't think that languishing is anything new to people. Mm-hmm. There's life, work life, personal life. There's an ebb and a flow that is just continuously coming in. The tide's coming in, is coming out. We're often in a state of languishing. And we're also often in a state of the opposite of languishing, which is feeling completely at your full potential. That's not anything that's new to us. What was really interesting about this past year is that we've been in a prolonged state of languishing. And the reason I think that it is actually, this is why this is such an interesting human experiment, is that we experience things in work, in our work routines, at the touch point to others. So if you're getting out in the morning, you're jumping on the train, you probably see the same people every day. Maybe you pick up your coffee from the same person. You get into the office, you see people around you. You may only actually have a real deep conversation with a handful of people, but you might see up to 50, 60, 70 people on your daily commute. And that's how we experience life mm-hmm. every day, through these visual or actual touch points with people. So we've been living for the last year, but we haven't really been alive. It hasn't felt like it because we've missed this interaction with people, oftentimes spontaneous, sometimes intentional. And we experience life through the touch points to others. So this last year has muted everything. It's muted the things that we do. It's muted noise and distraction, and it's muted our touch points with others. It's been a very low-key, simplified way of living, which has felt unnatural because we're not out feeling the energy of others and doing all these things. So I think that languishing in this case has just been an extended period of things we've felt in the past. And we've left with this question mark. But the really question is, it's on the person to think, how do they perceive this? What do they want to do with it? Mm-hmm. From our perspective, and that's why I say the why, we think the idea of being able to mute noise and distraction just by simply we couldn't go places, we couldn't do things, we couldn't be on the hamster wheel running. In some ways, we had to stay still and sit in it. It's allowed us to actually like a deep cleanse. As we re-enter into the workforce, as we design our strategies, we can pick what do we want to bring back into our life, our work life, our personal life? How do we really want to rebalance this? We're starting with somewhat of a clean slate. So languishing for sure, extended period, yes. Uncomfortable, absolutely. But the greatest learning happens in those points of time when you're feeling the most uncomfortable. And I think it's an empowering place to be able to make that decision to carve your work life in a thoughtful way on the back of this quieted, muted, non-distracted environment to really set yourself up for success and to really re-engineer how you see yourself fitting into work to avoid the burnout we were experiencing pre-pandemic. So from our perspective for the why, the workplace why, we think this has actually been a benefit. Even though it hasn't felt good, it's actually to your advantage to have that experience, to be able to reset yourself and how you see work.
You said something so profound, the uncomfortable aspect of all this. That's really when change happens. It's what changes culture. In the world of art, culture changes when wars happen and things bump up against each other and create crisis. So you're right. For people who were like, I don't want the crisis, but that's when the real change has happened. And I think has happened in a revolutionary way. We're changing what work means really for the first time in over 100 years.
Oh, I mean, we literally now have shaken off the shackles of the past and an industrial mindset coming from that point of fear. And we're moving in, and that's what's uncomfortable. Change is really, really hard. Change is also a really empowering opportunity. It's an empowering feeling to be able to kind of craft it. But you're absolutely right. It's a 100-year change. That's what we're experiencing right now. But the really interesting thing about that, Dan, is that it's no longer, fragmentation is the idea that, you know, we used to live in a command and control structure. It was easy. You had one way to work. You had to go to the office, butts in seats, 9 to 5, super simplistic, one world. But now we find ourselves living in worlds. If you have a company of 10,000, you're living in 10,000 worlds of one, amongst 10,000 worlds of one. And that's a really different perspective for how you engage at work and how you manage the workplace. But that's what the opportunity is to actually is to chart your own course. And that can happen now.
One of the really uncomfortable things I think about as a former executive recruiter, and it's about that command and control structure, is that structure worked often for high-flying executives. Why? Because what did they respond to? Bigger title, more money, and more power. And now, I think with the changes, the work is about getting things done. It's about moving the needle in the right direction, in the proper direction. And so now one's utility is valued probably more for the group involvements, what that person does to further the positive outcomes that the company or the organization wants to do, as opposed to furthering the personal outcomes. You agree with that?
You see, that's why work is it's not a tricky thing, but it's a double-edged sword. Because work is, and we've talked about this in the past, that work is, you know, in our minds, it's a global language. We all speak the language of work. It's so fundamental. It is literally what we do. It's the language that we use to glue us together. Sometimes conversations start with that, like, where do you work? What do? Who do I know that you know? Connections. It creates this form of uniformity. And it also provides all kinds of, like, not only does a paycheck to keep you out of poverty and pay your bills, but it creates a sense of hope. It allows you to find and discover your sense of purpose. So it's such a multifaceted topic. And when we show up to the workplace, as you mentioned there, the company needs to get things done. They need to get their, they need to hit the bottom line. They need to meet their objectives. They need to improve the company's overall objectives. But it's interesting. I think that's what's also at the back of this, is that there's a change in the attitude about how the people see what they expect from the work in the workplace and what the company expects from the worker is fundamentally changing. And that's the, I think, the uncomfortable part about it. And that's why we're in transition.
You know, I wrote a script to talk to you today, and I'm pretty much throwing it out because things are happening. Things are happening so quickly. I read a lot. I read so much. I don't even know what the sources are anymore. I just remember the key points. And I read something within the last 24 hours about the gender aspects of returning to workplaces. And you, I'm sure you saw the same article. There is terrible concern about the impact on women going back into the workforce, and especially from a standpoint of, will men be disproportionately co-located in their old offices versus women who, because they may have family responsibilities or other responsibilities, still need, or they feel they need, to be working remotely so that they can work all those other aspects of their lives. What's going on here, Denise? And what do we need to do to mitigate what could, if we don't fix it, become a huge gender crisis in the workplace?
Okay. Now you're, this is my jam right here.
Okay.
Now I'm going to roll up my sleeves on this one.
All right. Go for it.
It is absolutely the case that women have been completely killed over this last year. And even my own team, we have a female-led team at Sway. And it was even, we're in this the future of work and flexibility space. And once COVID hit, we all were completely displaced by the need to have to take care of our home responsibilities. The real concern or the benefit that we have here is the fact that gender inequality has a lot to do with pay and pay levels and the income inequality that exists between the genders. That's not going to go away anytime soon. That's a systematic problem. And McKinsey refers to this as the broken rung, as the idea that the real reason that we have a huge disconnect between, and we get to income inequality between the genders, is that women just can't get past that first step up into management because they're so pulled by the need to cover lots of bases. And so the idea about advancement just simply means there aren't enough women in the labor pool to advance at meaningful rates. So this last year has shown us that any kind of gains that we thought that women had in the world of work was really only on paper. They really weren't gains. And that we have a systematic and pervasive lack of support for families at work. And that's going to continue until we have a forced intervention. This is why we feel so strongly about flexibility being the go-to norm, because flexibility gives you the choice of where and when you work in a culture of trust and empowers families to make time for what matters for them. So I'm using the word family because that's what this is. This is a human issue. This is not a women's issue. This is a family issue, which is a community issue, which is a human issue. So the major upside to the last year is, I believe, is the fact that parents and families have been working at this together. even referencing myself, my husband and I have been partnering together over this past year to keep our kids in school, to keep our jobs in place. We partner really well. We've been fortunate like that. But he has seen in the last year a different dynamic to our family. He feels very involved, and he has been involved. And it's his intention to stay as involved going forward. But that's not something you could ever teach, describe, put a diversity inclusion metric around. You had to go through the experience. So it's my hope that coming out of the back of COVID has actually been a blessing in disguise, in the sense that families feel more of that structure and understand more what it is to have to share the responsibility in raising a family. And then could we embrace flexibility just to solve for that? Because that's actually a systematic intervention that will enable the future as female as we see it.
The future is female. I love that. Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, most people work in smaller than larger businesses, but the larger ones have to put some pedal to the metal and hire or appoint more women to their boards of directorship, right?
Yeah, but
when a CEO or a chairman of the board wants board members, he, and I say he because it's mostly he, goes to the dudes he knows that he plays golf with, right? All right, I'm being a little pejorative there.
Right.
But until we get more intentional about making that board look more like America, it's going to be very difficult to institutionalize all these positive changes, I believe.
And that's why, in my mind, the diversity inclusion metrics tend, there's a fallacy about that. Really important to have that forced intervention. But when you're trying to create a diverse and inclusive workplace, you're funneling people back into a system of work that excluded them from the beginning.
Right.
So it's a leaky bucket. So our system of work, generally speaking, is one big, massive leaky bucket. And that's what's going to continue to happen unless we have some systematic change at the root level, of which on the back of COVID, flexibility and embracing flexibility could be one of those forced interventions that really, truly, systematically equalizes the playing field between men and women and ultimately leads to a stronger bottom line and a more competitive nation, nationally speaking. Because I believe one of our biggest assets in the country is our untapped female potential.
Oh, I would agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
I would agree with that. I think women, they think differently. I think they're better collaborators. I used to place a lot of senior executives in sales. The women were better at it than the men.
Yeah.
They had a different skill set about getting to the yes than the men did. The men were all about the money. The women were about solving a problem, typically.
Right. So that is why we just gave a presentation this week on the future as female. And the reason that we think that is because just the labor pool demographics, there's just simply more women in the labor pools, actually tilted more female. Education rates are tilted female. So the projection is that the actual makeup of women in the workforce is becoming increasingly female. And at the point that you just mentioned right there, future of work skills is all about elevating human capabilities. And it's all about what people call the softer skills, the collaboration, teamwork, and empathy that come very naturally with female energy. So for all those markers, the signals are pointing to the future as female, which means we've got a problem. We just simply have a problem because nationally speaking, systematically, we don't support women at work in a material way that really truly allows inclusivity. So it's our hope that COVID and even this feeling of languishing gets us uncomfortable, because when you're uncomfortable, you really have a bit of a self-examination. And with that, can we finally address the why and implement real change in the world of work? I think we can.
And you talk about family, and family can be the kiddos you have in the house, but it also can be the broader feeling of the tribe. Now, I bring this up because the old hiring manager construct is manage the P&L and make sure everybody is on point. Okay, great. But we're all sentient beings, as you pointed out. So now today's hiring manager needs to be intentional about checking in to see how everybody is doing from a health and wellness standpoint.
Sure.
How's it going at home? How's your life going? What do you do when you're not working? Get to know people. And that's something new and very uncomfortable. And I was curious what your thoughts are about that and what the benefits of becoming more intentional about asking about health and wellness would be.
So that, I think, makes me think about the idea of bringing your whole self to work, about being very comfortable, about just being yourself in the workplace. But I think actually, practically speaking, that all goes back to trust. And it's a hard line to follow. What is my personal connection with my professional connection with people? And how do I see the whole person in a respectful way? And we follow a rule and we prescribe this about trust. I hear you, I see you, I value you. If you can follow those three things in any relationship, whether it's a friendship, it could be your spouse, it could be your manager, you're going to have a very successful relationship because you're going to be able to have trustful communication. And that can come very natural to people. So how do I see you? How do I actually hear you? And how do I value you? That will, you just following that mantra, it'll allow you to stay in touch and keep your finger on the pulse of your team. And how do they look? How are they behaving? What is their work product like? How are they behaving in meetings in ways that makes me think, something's not right here. Because I hear you, I see you, and you know I value you, I actually can see how you are and I'm in tune with it. And that allows you to ask the right questions at the right time. So it doesn't have to be a spontaneous Slack, random coffee chat. You can just stay in tune with people just by opening up that channel of real communication. And then you're going to know when something's off. And you can then ultimately, the best thing about that is get something before it becomes a real issue.
The thing I'm most excited about, Denise, and I'm looking at you, and you are my dear friend. I consider you part of my extended family. I don't know, I feel such kinship to you. And
as do I to you.
Such love and adoration, you know, and we haven't met in person, but we will.
We will.
The thing I'm so proud of with you is, in the time that I've known you, is how much your scholarship has scaled. I'm listening to you and I am just blown away by your thought leadership in the future of work. And I'm wondering if you could share with the audience what that journey's been like for you.
How would I describe it? It has been a journey, as is the future of work.
Yeah.
And that's also why I describe at Sway, we divide our house into two. We have the perfecting the how, like how do I actually work flexibly? Answer that question. We really lean in and feel good about the why. That's really interesting to us because that's the bigger conversation to be had. And all of our thought process around that just simply centered around humanism, human design. What is it to be a human? And really understanding that, our frailties and all the areas where we can shine, and having people embrace all that they have. So our greatest interest at Sway is helping people understand the potential that they have not yet found in themselves. That's why our approach at Sway is, as a workplace futurist, my partner in the business is a future of work coach. We believe together we can bring that skill set, but also that mindset that allows people to really untap the potential that they've yet to discover in themselves. Because we just fundamentally believe that the human design, we're all designed so purposeful with so much potential, and that the game of life is to find that spot, which is difficult, but it's 100% possible. We've done that at Sway and we model all of our thinking around that. So we lean on the why to help people feel like that. So it's Sway, we say our North Star is what we call work as a lifestyle. It's the opposite of work-life balance. Work-life balance makes you think that you're two different people on two different parts of the day. We're like, that's not true. You're born one person. You're one person living one life. And we're endeavoring to make it count through the language of work. And that's where we live with our members. That's how we want people to feel that they find their sense of purpose. But that's a big thing. That's a journey. So we lean heavily on that development of that line of thought. And then we practically bring that into our community so our members can feel that and live that.
That is just brilliant. Denise Bruder, it's always a pleasure. And I know we'll have you back on again because this conversation is evolving in the most amazing ways. And I adore you. You are my friend. And I am so excited about the work that we're doing together.
Absolutely.
For those listeners out there who are not familiar with Sway,
yep.
I'm wondering if you could point them to your social media and some of your thought leadership.
Absolutely. So we're on LinkedIn and Instagram primarily, and Twitter at Sway Workplace. You can find, we put a lot of material out there and have engaged with our members wide. But then you can join our community at swayworkplace.com. You'll find information and links into our community. So you can just jump right in our community, join us, and help us iterate on the future work.
Thanks so much.
See you next time, Dan. I really enjoyed this.
Links to Denise Bruder's and Sway's social media are included in the show notes for this episode at dansmolin.com. Meantime, if you haven't done so, please subscribe to this podcast wherever you get them, or listen to current and past episodes on our website at dansmolin.com. And please take a moment to positively rate and comment wherever you listen to this podcast, because that helps us to connect with new listeners. I'm Dan Smolin, and this is the Dan Smolin Podcast. Thank you for joining us on an amazing journey to the future of work doing meaningful work. And do remember this, our best days lie ahead. Let's connect again next week.